At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley. This is a fun show. We've got Kelly Ford, who will be on. He does the K-Ford ratings for college football. He's going to talk a little bit about the Illinois ratings for this year, what we can expect, the Big Ten overall, and how Illinois fits into that. And he will talk some of the national ratings and how that is going, along with some thoughts on college expansion, the CFP, etc. We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by advertising on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. The weekly two-hour syndicated show airs on more than 20 stations and is heard in six states throughout the Midwest, including Chicago, St. Louis, the Quad Cities, Peoria, Bloomington, Springfield, Champaign, Decatur, Rockford, and Quincy, just to name a few, with a reach of more than 11 million people. For information, send an email to mike@illiniguys.com and let's work together to grow your business. That's mike@illiniguys.com and let the power and reach of the Illini Guys Network work for you.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-485-8801. 800-485-8801. That's 800-485-8801.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley. As promised, Kelly Ford is on, and a lot of people have seen the K-Ford ratings out there on Twitter. Obviously, he has his website. I wanted to have him on because he dropped his projections for the Illini recently. Wanted to talk a little bit of football, but maybe not just recruiting, but talk a little bit about what we can expect for the future. Kelly, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to talking Illini and Big Ten today.
Good. So between the break, you and I were talking a little bit about your background, and you work for the Horizon League there in Indianapolis. You're a Purdue graduate who was a lifetime Ohio State fan. So right there, that's a little bit unusual. Can you talk a little bit about what was the birth of your ratings and give the fans a little bit of a background and where you come from?
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned it, you know, I'm from Indiana, Indianapolis, went to Purdue, have been a lifelong Ohio State fan. And a lot of people will kind of raise an eyebrow at that and say, wait a minute, you went to Purdue, you're an Ohio State fan. I didn't go to school to be a football fan or to play football or anything, right? I went to school for engineering, and being in-state in Indiana, that was the better option. But for as long as I can remember, like literally before I can even remember, I've been an Ohio State fan. That kind of got drilled into me at a very young age by some extended family. And it's worked out pretty well in my lifetime. You know, two national championships, lots of Big Ten championships and all that. I still do really like Purdue. Obviously, it's my number two team. But if Ohio State and Purdue are playing, and my college friends know this, and it took them a while to, I don't say they like it, but it took them a while to even accept it. I am rooting for Ohio State in those games. They know they're not going to change me. It is what it is. But yeah, so that's the fandom background, kind of where I grew up. But for the ratings, you know, college football has always been my favorite sport. I don't know why. I don't know what it was about the sport, but really it was that 2002 Ohio State team that really solidified like my love for this sport and of course for Ohio State. And then really the 2007 college football season, which of course Illinois fans will remember fondly for a trip to Pasadena. But that season was just incredible. I mean, that was the best single college football season I think we've ever had, at least in my lifetime, just with the number of upsets that we had, all the chaos that reigned week in and week out. And after going through that season, I was kind of like, all right, I don't think there's any other sport on this planet that I will enjoy as much as I do college football. So that 2007 season really cemented, this is the sport for me. This is the one I'm going to choose to really get excited about year in and year out. And then from the numbers standpoint, you know, I mentioned engineering. I do have kind of a numbers background, a knack for numbers. Bill Connolly, SP Plus, Brian Fromo, FEI. Those are two guys who for a really long time I've looked up to and thought, man, it's really cool what they do, kind of how they contextualize college football teams within the scope of power ratings. And they can make projections for how the season's going to go. And so, you know, a handful of years ago, I decided to try my hand at that. And it's just kind of grown from there. I've learned the ins and outs. I've added my own flavor, my own twist. And the K-Ford ratings, as I call them, that's not very creative, but I never claim to be creative. I claim to be a math guy. So the K-Ford ratings were born and they seem to have caught on, you know, in bits and pieces here and there in different fan bases around the country. They're not perfect. And I always tell people, you know, teams, they're going to be outlier teams. And there's a lot of things that a model, a mathematical model, can't capture. There's intangibles about a program, about coaches, about, you know, decisions that they're going to make. Not all of that can be modeled. So it's not gospel when it comes to the power ratings, but what I try to tell people is this is kind of the lens through which you can view a team at 30,000 feet and give yourself an objective baseline understanding of, okay, what can we realistically expect from this team this year? There's going to be teams that overachieve. There's going to be teams that underachieve, but more times than not, a team, at least, you know, in my 5 or 6 years doing this publicly, a team has generally trended towards having the season that the numbers have predicted and put forth even in the preseason before we get to the in-season data. So, you know, marrying my skill set with my passion for college football is kind of how I found myself in this power rating world. And it's been a lot of fun. Gotten to know a lot of people on Twitter or X now, connecting with different fan bases, different groups, including you here, Mike, now, and getting on this with you talking about Illinois. It's been so much fun. I really didn't know what to expect joining Twitter, but it's been everything I could have hoped for and more. And I'm just excited to see how kind of where it all goes.
Perfect. So for those people who are watching or listening right now, of course, you go to at K Ford Ratings. That's his Twitter page. And you can get all sorts of information, just about any team you enjoy. You can find it there. Plus his overall ratings for the preseason, at least version one, is out there and pinned. So there's a lot of things you can find. Of course, you can also go to IlliniGuys.com on YouTube. You can subscribe. And of course, real life, www.IlliniGuys.com is where you can subscribe for $99 a year. You get everything, including the message board, and that's where we can talk about, let's say, if there was a couple football commits coming in the next few days, you might get a little hint on what's going to happen. We obviously don't try to break news because we don't want to ruin a kid's moment, but we do try to give people hints so that you know it's going to occur before it does. As we enter into this season, I think the 2007 season may have to defend its title this year because 12 teams in the playoffs, I think college football has gone to war against the NFL. I don't know if that's ever a perfect thing to be doing, but I do think this 12-team playoff is going to be fantastic, particularly with a New Year's Eve game and then three games on New Year's Day. Finally, for the first time since I was a kid, New Year's Day means something again.
Yeah, it's a new world. There's so many changes that have happened in college football really in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. The 12-team CFP is just the newest of those. And so it does present a lot of exciting opportunities for, you know, 8+ teams now who previously would not have had that opportunity at the end of the year to compete for a national championship. I do think there are arguments to be had and to listen to about why an expanded playoff could be negative for the sport as a whole. But really, we're beyond that at this point, and it's happening. So either you get on board, you get excited about it, or you get left behind. So there are some exciting things. I'm looking forward, Mike, to seeing which teams will benefit from the expanded playoff versus which ones will appear to benefit but not really benefit. And that could be a little confusing, I think. And so just to explain it a little bit further, there's going to be a benefit from making it to the CFP. There's a lot of programs out there who have had teams of high enough caliber and quality in the last 10 years to have had an opportunity, but because the field was four, there wasn't a spot for them. Now you're going to have these same high quality teams that are making it. How much damage can they do in the playoff? And early on, you know, 2024, 2025, 2026, perhaps you don't have to win a game in the playoff for it to be deemed a successful year and for everybody to be excited. My fear is that for a lot of these teams, particularly in the SEC and in the Big Ten, making the playoff is no longer going to be a sign or a signal of a successful season. And rather, that's going to be the minimum bar, which is expected from fan bases. And if you fail to make the playoff, then, you know, all heck could break loose. You don't want to fire the coach. You want to make wholesale changes. You got to bring in a ton of new transfers. So my biggest concern is that I hope fan bases, and I'm not suggesting Illinois is one of these by any means, but I hope fan bases recognize that the overall success of a season, in my opinion, should not be defined by simply making a playoff, winning a playoff game, advancing to a certain round of the playoff. Every single Saturday is special in college football. And we've seen it on any given Saturday, a team can be upset. And that's what makes this sport so great. I certainly hope that the traditions of the weekly Saturdays persist in this new era. Beating your rival still matters a ton in this era. Winning conference championships still matters in this era. And we don't solely focus on the 12-team CFP. I'm concerned for our sport as a whole for that, but I'm also excited at the same time because of the opportunities that some of these new teams will have to be in that spotlight late in the year. It certainly will create more intrigue late in the regular season as teams are jostling for those playoff spots than it did in the previous. But I hope because of that excitement, we don't lose focus on the other things that have made college football so great for centuries.
Yeah, I personally, I think it's a fantastic idea. I do think the conference championships now don't have a lot of meaning. They just are, they're revenue. So SEC and Big Ten, it's a chance to print money. I get it. But there's a part of me that says when a team is playing 12 games plus a 13th, and then the team that wins it all and the team that ends up in second place are going to play four more games, you're looking at college teams potentially playing as many as 17 games. I don't know when you go to this, and then maybe I assume they're going to expand to 16 pretty quickly. I don't know if there's any need for the conference championship week. Do you agree with me or you disagree on that?
I agree with you. I've actually advocated for doing away with the conference championship game itself for some time now, but as you said, it prints money. It's a huge revenue generator for conferences. As long as that continues to be the case, it will not go away. But I agree with you. I still think winning a conference championship is something that should be celebrated and is celebrated in many circles. I'm not sure that the game itself is necessary. Now, at the same time, as conferences have expanded and you're not able to play, you know, 90 or 100% of your conference in any given year, now we actually maybe have a need for a championship game because you could easily have two teams that go undefeated who didn't play each other. And it's like, all right, well, which one is it? And that's not to say we didn't have that before. We certainly did. I think 2002, actually, Ohio State and Iowa both went undefeated in Big Ten play, if I'm not mistaken. So this is not a new issue we would face, but certainly now with the size of conferences, the need for a championship game to truly determine, you know, who is the conference champion might be more pertinent. But I agree with you. In terms of the length of the season, the wear and tear that we're putting on these 18 to 22-year-old, in most cases, these days it's really 24 or 25 with the COVID year still hanging in there, which I'm acutely watching with the power ratings and the returning production and all that. Perhaps we do need it, but I certainly would be supportive of a world in which we didn't have the conference championship. But again, I would support the previous iteration of conference alignment that we had before this one.
Right. And I go back and forth, but I'm not certain that you really need the bowls much anymore. I know a lot of the coaches are like, we want those extra 15 practices. Maybe you just have 3 weeks of practice postseason for everybody. But when it comes to the playoff, I'm going to want to watch every minute. My fellow Illini guy, Brad Sturdy, and I, we make a joke that once the CFP starts, then you have the NFL playoffs, then you have college basketball in the Final Four, then you get to the NBA playoffs. So you just tell your wife you'll see her in June. But the bottom line is, are the Bulls relevant anymore?
That's a tricky question, Mike. For me, I don't want to see the Bulls go away because, as I talked about earlier, the nuances of college football, the things that make this sport unique compared to all the others in American sports or in the world of sports, the bowl system is one of those things that's unique to college football. And so I don't want to see a world in which we lose those things that made college football unique and special. Now, you want to talk about their significance. You want to talk about people, if they get excited about it, TV ratings, you know, attendance at them. I'll listen to all those. It's hard to argue the facts, but the reality is bowls are one of the things that for a long time set college football apart from any other sport. And so I would be hesitant to move away from something that differentiates college football like that. But with regard to its significance, it's hard to argue with the data that's in front of us about what these mean now, again, in the expanded CFP era, because bowls were everything pre-1998, and then we introduced the BCS. Okay, well, bowls still mean a lot, but there's that BCS championship game. Then we expanded the 14 playoff. It's like, well, you know, the New Year's Six bowls, they still mean something, but it's really all about the playoff. You see where I'm going. Now we have 12 teams. I agree with you. It'll probably be 16 or more sooner than later. The attention is just shifting all towards the playoff. And that to me is a little sad because that is the NFL model. That is the NBA model. That's all professional sports in our country. That's college basketball in our country. College ball was different. I hope we don't lose that, but I fear we're heading in that direction.
It's definitely a time of change. Now, I look at conference expansion. I think it's back to the future because I anticipate, and maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I see the Big Ten within the next 4 to 5 years, maybe quicker, depending on the ACC. I see them going to 24 teams, and then you'll have 4 6-team divisions. And all of a sudden, let's just throw a hypothetical, nothing more, nothing less, but you might have a 6-team division that's Wisconsin, Illinois, Northwestern, Iowa, Purdue, Notre Dame, just to throw something out there. And so all of a sudden, regional football is brought back by the bigger conferences expanding. I think the SEC will probably follow to some number. And then, of course, you've got those divisions. And in theory, you could just let's call the Big Ten, let's call them the AFC. And then you could have 4 6-team divisions in the SEC. Let's call that the NFC. And you could have a playoff system and you could still operate the rest of college football. You could still do the bowls, but you could have a playoff system that's even self-contained there if you so desired. And to me, these super conferences and the Big 12 may expand again. We may have a little bit of regional college football return. Am I crazy?
I think we're at this point in time and there's, you know, a half a dozen to a dozen different viable paths forward. Like realistically, we could end up going one of these ways. You've just outlined one of the viable paths that I could absolutely foresee college football going down in the not too distant future. And you hit on a phrase that I really like, regional college football. To me, college football is at its best when it is regional. So if it was up to me, and I think this depends on when you're born and kind of, you know, what your interest is in the sport and all of that. But if it was up to me, I'd go back to like 2005-ish and just freeze the conferences. Like whatever the membership was of each conference, 2005, boom, that's what we are. That's what we're going with. And again, I think it depends on nostalgia, when you're born, all these things. But to me, if we can get back to a regional place for our, if we're calling them divisions instead of conferences, I'd even be okay with that. If we can get back to playing regionally, geographically in the regular season, of course, with some non-conference games sprinkled in, I don't want everything to be contained into that geographic box. But that to me is one of those things, again, going back, that made college football unique, that made it special in the history and the tradition of it. So I am not naive. Everything is driven by revenue, by money, and that's how conference membership decisions are made. They will continue to be made that way. I hope that at the end of all of this, we end up in a place, like you said, where we have these regional divisions. I don't want it to be an AFC, NFC, Big Ten, SEC, and everybody else that's left behind, because I think that'd be sad for a lot of fan bases in college football. I feel right now great lately for Oregon State and Washington State, for example, those fan bases. I certainly wouldn't want to find myself in those positions, so I wouldn't wish that on them either. But ultimately, if we can get back to regional, if we can have that kind of structure, then I'll take it as a step back in the right direction, because I think a lot of the membership changes we've seen, even in the Big Ten, how much has it changed since 2005? And folks older than me will say, well, Kelly, even go back earlier than that, because we didn't have Penn State at one point either. Yeah. I'm okay with Penn State in the Big Ten because that's all I've known, right? So it's all about your reference points when you're born and all those things. So it's a new world. Like I said, either get on board or get left behind. So it's exciting. It does create opportunity, and we certainly need to try to find those pockets of opportunity and shape it for the better, the best we can.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Now let's change our focus, because there was a tweet out there that you did, gosh, June 7th, 4:56 p.m., where you talked about the Illinois ratings for this season. And of course, this is Eye on the Illini, so we have people who are going to want to look at that rating for the team and also be able to evaluate how you got to where you're at, have you explain a little bit of what you think this team is capable of. And the first thing I'm going to start off and ask you is, how do you rate Illinois offensively? Are they going to try to be a little more like the team that they closed the season with, where they actually threw the ball? Or are they going to try to do the team earlier in the year, which was content to go four plays from the 1 yard line? If they don't score, running the ball up the middle, then that's life. How do you rate a team when they had such a weird bipolar personality offensively, at least, and defensively was just a rough year anyway?
Yeah, it's a really fair question. And I would say that, you know, coming off the defensive year that you had in 2022, anything was probably going to seem rough in 23. Actually, the defense was still relatively, you know, good, better than FBS average last year, but certainly it paled in comparison to that really stout 2022 unit. So I'll just say off the top, how I generate the power ratings in the preseason for all 134 teams, there's three main components. You know, it's returning production, and I include in their transfers. So how much talent are you bringing back from last year's team, including the transfers that are coming in and the transfers that are going out? That's lost production, of course. And I've got scalers in there for, you know, is the guy coming from a Northern Illinois, or is he coming from an Alabama, right? To try to adjust for the direction of that transfer. So that's the biggest component of the preseason power ratings for all teams, for both offense, defense, special teams as well, even though that's a much more minor component. And then you're looking at, how has this team performed recently in their K-Ford rating? So if I look at Illinois, you know, last year, year-end power rating of 62 out of 133 FBS teams. 2022, we talked about it. What a great year, especially on defense. Ended the year number 24 in the power ratings. 2021 was number 72. So you go back and back and back, and I've changed the weights this year as to, you know, how much does it matter now how good a certain program was 3 or 4 years ago in this transfer portal era, where it's so much easier to turn over a team in just one offseason than it's ever been before. So that's the second component, is your recent K-4 rating. And then your third is your recent recruiting. So not transfers, but high school recruiting. And again, I've adjusted my weighting for this because in the transfer portal world, different teams are approaching high school recruiting differently. You know, Dabo Swinney, he's kind of approaching it the same as he always had. And then you've got on the other side, you know, Deion Sanders and Lincoln Riley, who are certainly taking advantage of the portal a little bit more than the high school ranks. And then lots of teams fall in between, including Illinois, I would say, on that spectrum. So that's how I, at a baseline level, evaluate every single team. And that's also why the model is not going to be 100% accurate on every team, because as you just said, Illinois last year, bipolar was the term you used. Like, they had two totally different approaches on the offensive side of the ball throughout the course of the season. Well, I'm boiling that down to one number for last year's offensive power rating for that unit, their efficiency basically, and it ended at number 80, which was a slight improvement on 2022, which was 88, which was a slight improvement on 2021, which was 91. So you've been showing progress on the offensive side of the ball by my numbers, by my calculations, each of the last few years. It's the defense that huge step forward in 22, small step back. I'm now projecting to take another step forward here in 2024 as well. So there probably are more nuanced approaches that you could take if you had the time, effort, energy, resources, all those things to dive into every single 134 teams at that micro level. What I have found is that by applying this general approach to all 34, you can get a pretty good baseline level of understanding. And then as the season progresses, the preseason weight gets phased out, and it gets replaced with in-season data, which of course is even more informative. So Illinois' rating last year, you know, rose and fell on a week-to-week basis. the offense in particular, based on the approach that they were deploying in any given game. So that's kind of how I go about it. I do have the offense this year, preseason number 86. Again, I mentioned last year, they number 80, 2 years ago, 88. So kind of been hanging out in that 80s range. If the offense can play at a top 60 level, at a top 50 level, I certainly think the ceiling for Illinois gets much, much higher, because I do think the defense is going to be pretty strong. Last year, number 58, coming into this year, looking at the returning production and some of these other things, grading out pretty favorably relative to the other teams in that area, have the defense for Illinois at number 41 right now. So it'll be interesting to see. I definitely have more questions about the offense than the defense, which I think most Illinois fans would agree with. But if you can get kind of a higher level of play than expected on the offensive side of the ball, you'll have a much better season than my initial V1 preseason numbers are suggesting.
We're all a little scared here just due to defensive line depth. And then they lost two talented corners in the transfer portal. They also got in a very good cornerback out of Texas. So there's some hope that with the transfer portal, they can do some work at defensive tackle. They've been successful recently here, but the biggest concern is Johnny Newton, and then being a little bit thin in the interior line could be scary. It all depends on injury, which is something that's impossible to rate.
Oh, 100%. And again, I went back to the very beginning about the model can't capture everything. Injury is first and foremost. And, you know, in the season, I can manually make adjustments and, hey, this quarterback who's really, really good, obviously really important for this team, is injured, not playing. You can replace him with whoever the backup is. But from a broad baseline perspective, injury is one of that. Weather is another one that people always ask about. Those are really the two things that, more than anything else, I get asked about. Hey, are you accounting for this? Are you accounting for that? No, I'm not. So again, the model, the projections, it's all baseline. It's up to the individual consumer of that to make their own tweaks to form their own opinion.
So where did you have the Illini on a national basis for Illini fans who are collectively holding their breath to see where this team has come in at in your initial projection?
So right now, overall, I've given the unit rankings. Overall, right now, I have Illinois as the number 63 power rated team out of 134 this year in FBS, with a rating of minus 0.1, which means essentially zero, that Illinois is the average FBS team. Because the way my ratings are scaled, you have a team like Georgia with a rating of 32 something. That means they're 32 points better. My model suggests they're 32 points better than the average FBS team on a neutral field. And you have that going all the way down to Temple, who's minus 26 something, I think. Temple would be 26 points worse on a neutral field against the average FBS team by my model. Illinois is that team. They are the average FBS team on a neutral field for me, number 63. Last year finished the year number 62, so very, very similar. 2 years ago, I mentioned number 24. That was a great year for Illinois, the best year for Illinois in the CFP era by my numbers. But with that, and then given the schedule that Illinois plays, which by my numbers is the fifth most difficult in the Big Ten in conference play. So I have two different schedules. Difficulty rankings, if you will. One is, how difficult is your schedule overall? Illinois comes in number 23 there in the nation. So there's 22 teams who, by my V1 preseason power ratings, play a more difficult schedule than Illinois. So really difficult schedule overall. But then also, let's peel away the three non-conference games. How is the in-conference schedule difficulty? Because as I mentioned, you know, now we have an 18-team Big Ten. You only play 9 conference games. You are one team. So you miss 8 teams in conference play. It's almost more important who do you not play than who you do play at this stage, because it's almost half the league that you're not playing. So Illinois, they have the fifth most difficult in-conference slate. And Illinois, as these fans know, you guys don't even have to play Ohio State. You don't have to play Wisconsin. You don't play USC. You don't play Washington, who's a top 30 power-rated team for me. And you don't play Iowa, and you're still the fifth most difficult. So that just goes to show how deep and talented the Big Ten is. So it's a tough schedule, both overall and in conference. You're, by my numbers right now, an average FBS team. When you mix all those things together, 5-7 is the most likely record for Illinois in my preseason projections. In the Big Ten, it's 3-6 most likely. But there is a 34% chance right now, by my numbers, that Illinois reaches that 6-win threshold to go bowling. So, you know, a 1-3 chance. I don't know if Illinois fans think that is too high. I think that's too low. I think that's right. I'm sure the listeners will let us know. But 34, 1 in 3%, 1 in 3 chance to make it to a bowl game this year is what my numbers right now are saying about Illinois. I will refine these just given my process and my timeline. They'll be refined a couple times before we get the quote unquote final official preseason ratings in August, but they probably aren't going to change too much percentage points here and there. But the bulk of that information is certainly in there at this point for me.
And as you looked at the schedule, you've obviously got the opening at Eastern Illinois, which if that goes sideways, is going to be a really rough year for the Illini.
Agreed.
And then they have a very challenging schedule where you run into a Kansas team that has performed admirably the last couple of years under Lance Leipold, and then running into a Central Michigan team. The MAC has played a lot of close games against the Illini over the years. And then, of course, you run into road games at Nebraska and Penn State. So you're looking, if you were to extrapolate, probably what, 2 and 3 at the end of 5 games, if you had to guess?
That's what the numbers would suggest. If you can get 3 and 2, like especially if you can win, you know, I'm really looking at Nebraska on a Friday night. If you can win that game and get your Big Ten season off to a 1-0 start, that'd be huge. 2 and 3 is probably, you know, what I would expect as an objective neutral viewer. 3 and 2, I think would be great. Of course, anything above that is gravy. And I'd be disappointed if we only had 1 win after 4 games, if I was an Illinois fan. And then of course you get your bye there, or your off week there in week 6 before the Big Ten schedule continues rolling on. But I would hope for a minimum of 2. And if we could get 3, I'd be feeling really good about that first kind of month of the season.
And then we run into Purdue, Michigan, Oregon, and Minnesota. A challenging thing there when you think of Michigan, Oregon back to back. That's,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, the silver lining is Michigan's at home. I mean, I don't know what we can say here. That's brutal. I mean, Michigan for me is the number 7 power rated team in the country. Oregon's number 3, having to go to Eugene their first year in the Big Ten. That's a long way to go for a conference game. Of course, that's the new normal now in the Big Ten. And we already talked about Penn State. I have them number 6 overall in the power ratings right now. So, you know, in your first 8 weeks of the season, your first 7 games, you're playing, sorry, first nine weeks, which is your first 8 games, you've played 3 top 7 power rated teams overall, 2 of which on the road, both in conference. So it's that's what I mean. It's such a difficult schedule for Illinois. And like I said, you don't even play Ohio State, who's another top 5 power rated team. You know, that stretch there, Purdue, Michigan at home, Oregon on the road, Minnesota at home. It depends what your goal is for the season. If your goal is to go bowling, you probably have to have 4 wins, just to give yourself some margin down the stretch. So, you know, we're looking at maybe 2 more there. What's it going to be? Purdue at home, and then, you know, you're going to get Minnesota at home. Hopefully, and that's a 42% win expectancy for me right now. That's a toss up enough type of game. Where certainly Illinois will have a good chance. It's especially if you can make a couple big plays there. I'd be hoping for 4 wins after that if I was Illinois. If I have fewer than that, I'm probably not too happy. But it's also it's hard to not be happy given the schedule we just outlined there. But I do think, you know, after Minnesota, you get another off week there in week 11. To feel good about your chances to go bowling, you probably need to have 4 games. The last 3 are all gettable. I know we'll talk about them in a second, but you don't want to have that pressure of knowing we have to win 3 straight to get to that bowl game. So to feel really good about it, you probably need to be at 4 after the Minnesota game, get yourself healthy before then continuing on down the stretch for the last 3.
Yeah. Purdue has caused all sorts of issues for Illinois recently. And conversely, rightly or wrongly, Brett Bielema has had PJ Fleck's number. That's the intangible that you talk about. Now that doesn't mean anything once the ball's snapped, but for whatever reason, Bielema seems to be one step ahead of Fleck when it comes to Saturday afternoons when they're looking at each other across the field.
And this would be a great year to continue that trend for Illinois fans. Because like I said, if you're looking to go bowling, which of course all your fans are hoping for and maybe some are even expecting, that's a game that let me say it this way. I'm not sure Illinois can get to 6 wins if they don't get the win against Minnesota at home.
Right. Right. I would totally agree with that. Then you look at what is not an easy month, but a much easier stretch when you have Michigan State, which is reeling from the past administration, so to speak. Rutgers, which I think would have been interesting had Coach stayed there and not did his little foray into the NFL, what he might have built by now. And then, of course, Northwestern in the game, which is not yet – they don't know exactly where they're going to play it. We're hearing Wrigley Field, but both Ryan Day and Brett Bielema have told the Big Ten that they expect two sidelines, not what you saw at the Iowa versus Northwestern game where they both teams were on the same sideline. So the fact that they're going to tell that they could potentially tell Brett Bielema, well, you're just going to have to deal with it. That's one thing. I don't know if the Big Ten wants to say that to Ryan Day.
The politics, again, I work in college athletics. The politics within college athletics, within big time Big Ten football, they're real. And that's definitely something that Big Ten office is having to deal with. And, you know, you want them to make the decisions that are best for the student athletes. At the end of the day, what's best for the student athletes are going to be playing in this game? Whatever that is, that's what we need to do. If it upsets coaches, then it upsets coaches. But it's a lot easier said than done. I can say that I'm not in that office. I don't have to make those tough decisions, but whatever's the best for the student athletes, I certainly hope that's where they end up. Yeah. These last three games, like you said, they're not easy by any stretch, but in relation to the rest of the schedule, this is your stretch of the season where it's like, all right, Illini, let's go out and let's collect some W's here. Michigan State, like you said, you know, first year with Jonathan Smith coming over from Oregon State. I'm curious to see what he can build. I was really impressed with what he did at Oregon State. I'm wondering how much of that had to do with he's an Oregon State guy. He played at Oregon State. You know, he's familiar with this area. He's familiar with that conference. All of that is out the window when he comes to the Big Ten. But what he brings with him is everything he learned, the person that he is, the way he builds relationships, all those things. So if I'm a Michigan State fan, I'm optimistic that, you know, getting going down the road 2, 3, 4 years, we'll be in an okay spot. How's it going to look in year one? I think that's a fair question. I don't have the answer. My numbers right now have Michigan State at number 74 from a power rating standpoint. Pretty good on defense, top 35. The offense, got some questions. I mean, bottom 15 right now in my projections on the offensive side of the ball. Certainly Michigan State fans are going to be hoping they're better than that, but that's a game that for Illinois, for the standards in Champaign, if you're going to go bowling, that's a game you got to win. And then Rutgers, like you said, if Schiano, you know, never left and just continued on there, where would Rutgers be? Because I mean, geez, what years were those that he had them absolutely rolling in the Big East, you know, the mid 2000s, early 2010s, whenever that was, that was a program to be reckoned with. And then he leaves, they kind of fall down, they join the Big Ten. They haven't had a lot of success in the Big Ten yet, but it's still a program in New Jersey, tons of access to great talent in high school, you know, in New Jersey, in Maryland, D.C., that area. They could get it going, even Eastern Pennsylvania. You can get it going if you're able to keep some of that talent home, if you can pick a few players out of the portal. But in terms of this year, Rutgers, you know, number 50 for me, you're going on the road there. I said Illinois is number 63. So my numbers do like Rutgers in that game, a 33% win expectancy for Illinois. That's a game. If you win at Rutgers, blind to everything else that's happened, I feel pretty good now about Illinois' chances to go bowling. Like that's a huge swing game, I think, where if you can get it, that's great. If you don't get it, again, that's why I don't want to be banking on it. I want to have at least four going into this final three. It gets dicey again, but if you can get that game at Rutgers, I'd feel really good about reaching six wins. And then you end, like you said, with Northwestern. I have it as a neutral site game for right now because that's what we know. But there's no home field baked in for Northwestern here for that. Probably going to be just as many, if not more, Illinois fans in whatever venue this is than Northwestern. If I had to guess, again, I hope I'm not way off on that, but that's my guess. That's a game right now, 54% chance to win for Illinois. To go bowling, you got to get it. So again, 2-3, 2-1 in that final three is kind of, I'd be disappointed if I was an Illini fan and we did worse than 2-1 in our final three. But hopefully, you know, you've banked enough wins along the way that you can avoid a slip up potentially and still get to that six win mark. So that's why, you know, we've just gone through all 12 games. There's really not a gimme. I mean, Eastern Illinois, to me, that's a gimme. Central Michigan, I know you're being respectful of the MAC and some good programs in there. To me, that's a gimme for Illinois. Like that needs to be a win for Illinois as an objective neutral fan. But outside of those two games, there's not a game I look at and say, yep, W for Illinois, which it's so hard in the Big Ten, especially for programs like Illinois who are not perennially a top 10 team. It's just so hard. And the talent is just getting aggregated even more, consolidated even more into these two conferences in particular, which is great for Big Ten for a lot of reasons, but it's also difficult for Big Ten teams because you're like, man, all these really great teams, Oregon, USC, Washington, UCLA, it just makes it that much harder to win games in conference, but it creates a lot of excitement at the same time.
So there's a 33% chance, roughly, that the Fighting Illini may end up going bowling this year. The X factor is probably as to where Barry Lunny Jr. lands with his ability to influence Coach Bielema to open up the offense a little bit, which would be, I mean, the last two or three weeks of the season must have been shocking for Big Ten coaches to watch an Illinois quarterback throw for 500 yards under Brett Bielema.
Yeah, and Illinois fans had to be like, wait, what the heck? We had this in our back pocket the whole time, and now we're just now getting to it. So, yeah, I mean, that provides optimism. It's exciting. It's, you know, the ray of sunshine. We got to grasp onto that if we're Illinois fans and hope that we can pull that through in 2024. I also want to note something I didn't talk about here, Mike, is also up in the top left of the team projection graphics for Illinois, which you mentioned. It was tweeted out. It's also on the website, k4raids.com. The top left. That talks about the schedule difficulty. And I've hit on overall, you know, the 23rd most difficult schedule in the country. But I also break it down a little bit farther than that in terms of what's the average, you know, offense you're facing, defense, on a week-in, week-out basis. Illinois faces the 8th most difficult collection of opposing FBS defenses in the country. There's only 7 teams in the country that play a more difficult collection on average, week-in, week-out, of opposing defenses than Illinois. And again, part of that's playing in the Big Ten. There's a lot of really good defenses in the Big Ten, especially in what was the old Big Ten West, where you're still playing a lot of those teams here in 2024 for Illinois. So that's going to be a challenge for your offense, which, as I said, you know, right now is in the mid-80s. That's why if they can play at that top 60, top 50 level, I'll feel so much better about the outlook this year, because just week in, week out, you're going up against hugely difficult defenses. If I just quickly read through some of these, Nebraska defense for me right now, number 6, Penn State, number 4, both those games are on the road. Michigan's number 3, Oregon's number 14, Minnesota's a top 25 defense by my numbers right now, as is Rutgers, that's on the road. Michigan State, Northwestern, both in the 30s. There's so many good defenses you're going to face. Now on the other side, you face the 60th most difficult, or in other words, the 9th easiest collection of opposing FBS offenses. So for as difficult as it's going to be for your offense against those defenses, your defense, which again, by my numbers is a top, you know, 40, 41 unit, should be able to take advantage on a somewhat regular basis against the offenses that it's facing. So can your defense, you know, force a bunch of turnovers? Can your defense score some touchdowns on that side of the ball? Can they wreak havoc? Can they stop? Like, if they can do some of these things and set your offense up or steal some points, you know, that's going to be a way that you can steal a game or two throughout the year as well. So that's another thing that in the preseason, I really like to harp on. Once we get going in the season, if I ever come back on or we're ever going back and forth in the comments on Twitter, I won't talk about schedule difficulty much during the season, because then it's much more matchup based. It's much more, okay, this is weak, this is the opponent, this is what we're doing. But right now in the preseason, holistically viewing the season as a whole, I think looking at a schedule difficulty from a conference standpoint overall, but then also diving into those unit projections, It just further helps people understand why my numbers are suggesting what they are. Because I just have this feeling where a lot of your listeners, a lot of fans might be like, he's way off. There's no way we're not going to win 6 games. And I'm not suggesting you won't. I'm saying there's a 1 in 3 chance you will. And a reason that you might not is just that difficulty level week in, week out of the defenses you're going to face, knowing that we have questions about your offense. But again, if that offense can improve and play at a level better than expected, now we're cooking.
Yeah, for those fans who are concerned about schedule difficulty, et cetera, the only thing I would tell you is Florida's schedule, that's the worst schedule I have ever seen. I don't think I have ever seen a 5-game streak that they close the season with where you face, and I'll use your ratings, but number 1, Georgia in a neutral site, and then go to Texas, number 5, then play LSU and Ole Miss, number 9 and number 10, and then travel to Florida State, number 14, to end the season. They need to be undefeated going into that part of the schedule. Let's just say on June 10th, I'm predicting that Florida will have a new coach for next season. Billy Napier, nothing that he did wrong, but he won't survive that schedule.
It's incredible. And Mike, I'll give you something that I haven't even posted yet, but I'm planning to. So you're getting kind of a sneak peek, a preview. Just for Florida, really quickly. I know it's not a Florida podcast, but Florida quickly. Oh, you do have the Zook connection there, though.
Yes, we do.
Go back a few years. Florida schedule. The way that I determine schedule difficulty for all 134 teams is you have to pick a common reference point. For me, it used to be average top 25 FBS team, which, you know, number 12, 13. Now I'm doing the number 12 team because 12 teams make the playoff, and we know it's not going to be the top 12 teams, right? Because you're going to have your G5 rep, and it's possible you'll get a couple conference champions that finish outside the top 12 that earn a spot in the playoff through the AQ system. But I picked the number 12 team in the country. It doesn't really matter what your reference point is for intents and purposes of this conversation. I picked 12, and you view every single team's schedule through that lens. So not how many wins is Illinois expected to get against Illinois' schedule, how many wins is the number 12 team in the country expected to get against Illinois' schedule, and then stack that up against all other 133 teams. Where does your team come out? That's how I get the number 23 for Illinois. There are 22 other schedules out there against which the number 12 team in the country by my numbers would be expected to win fewer regular season games. That's how you get to Illinois 23. Florida's number one, and yeah, they're number one, as you pointed out, for obvious reasons. But here's the kicker with Florida. The average, or the number 12 team in the country, would be expected to win 6.9 regular season games against Florida's schedule. So the number 12 power rated team in the country would be expected to go 7-5 against Florida's schedule. That's how difficult it is. But number two, let's give some context. Number two is Vanderbilt, 7.4 expected wins against that schedule. There is a full half game difference over a 12 game sample, not a big sample, between Florida's schedule at number one and Vanderbilt's at number two. That's a huge gap, because if you go another half game, you're now at number 11 in the country. If you go another half game after that, you're at number 21 in the country. Another half game after that puts you at number 35. Like, the difference between one and two is massive. And I'm really excited to post that here later this summer, but giving you a sneak peek here of what the numbers say about Florida is, because yes, they're number one, but people say, oh, okay, they're number one. It's the margin by which they have the most difficult schedule in the country that absolutely floors me this year. And to your point, Billy Napier, it's really unfortunate, because ever since he got there, Florida has played one of, if not the most difficult schedules in the country. And my numbers would suggest they actually are showing improvement. And he may not make it because the schedule's so difficult. And at the end of the day, people want to see wins. They don't necessarily always give it the context that it deserves when you view that record through the lens of how difficult was the schedule.
Which is why the Super Conference will never happen, because these fans of Ohio State and Georgia and Alabama, they could not live going through a few seasons where their team is the team that has a losing record. And when you go into a super conference, there aren't any gimmies. And I just don't see a lot of these teams that have been good for decades, because they can cherry pick their non-conference opponents and then part of their conference schedule are gimmies, which means, for instance, Nick Saban every year, and he is the greatest college coach of all time, but literally every year he's got about three toss-up games all year long. The rest of them, he's expected to win. All of a sudden, if Alabama's going into a season with eight toss-up games, I'm not certain their fan base would survive.
Without a doubt. And I was talking to somebody recently in college athletics about, you know, we've seen all this expansion. At what point, if ever, do we see conferences retract? Do they say, hey, I'm totally making this up, Northwestern, that's a rival of Illinois. Hey, Northwestern, why do we have you in this league? You're not winning. You're not doing these things. Well, every league needs some teams where the big boys, the big dogs, the ones who have been at the top of the conference year over year, are expected to get wins. Every conference needs teams. I mean, you see it in the SEC. Vanderbilt, that's a team that you just roll into Nashville and get a win. If you don't have those kinds of teams in your conference, as you just said, with a super conference type setup, there's still the same number of conference wins to go around. Now it's just a lot more difficult teams on a week in, week out basis. And you're not going to Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, you name it. You're not going to get 10 guaranteed wins in a year anymore. You're going to have to fight for those. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, for that reason, if that's what keeps the super conference from happening, then I'm okay with it. Because like I said, I'm not loving the massive expansion, with the caveat, as we talked about, if we can get back to regional divisions, I'd be cool with that.
Yep. Well, hey, I really appreciate you dropping by. Can you give folks how they can get to you so that they can follow you or to go to your website, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on. It was great talking Illinois and Big Ten. So much fun on and off the air here with you. But yeah, you can find my content on X at KFord Ratings. You can find me on the website, kfordratings.com. I'll be populating both of those places with a lot more information, a lot more preview type stuff as we get going throughout the summer here. Obviously, building up to the season in August. And then during the year, I mean, every single week, I'm updating the numbers, getting new projections out there, conference championship races, bowl eligibility percentages, all that stuff. Anything Illinois fans might want to know about their team, hopefully I'm posting about it and then putting it on the website. So at KFord Ratings, kfordratings.com. And again, Mike, thanks so much. I appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And folks, we'll be right back after these messages.
Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across the country, or on the other side of the world, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know, be it in-game results, top-level stories, or the latest behind-the-scenes info in recruiting. IlliniGuys.com has you covered. For about 25 cents a day, you can have an inside path to your favorite Illini teams, and we'll even throw in a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button, and get immediate access to dozens of stories each month, message forums, free giveaways, and more. IlliniGuys.com.
Have you ever tried to buy gold and silver and felt like you were talking to a used car salesman? That's because the precious metals industry is like the Wild West. Salesmen can say pretty much anything or make any promise they want without repercussion. But Genesis Gold Group is different. They're a faith-driven Christian precious metals company and believe in educating their customers, not pressuring them for a quick sale. Genesis Gold Group focuses on customer service, not sleazy marketing. Genesis Gold Group is named after the first book of the Bible for a reason. Proper stewardship of wealth is their specialty. Find out why they've earned a 5 out of 5 rating through the Better Business Bureau and how they can help you secure your wealth or retirement through physical precious metals. Call right now to learn more.
800-238-3714. 800-238-3714. 800-238-3714. That's 800-238-3714.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Eye on the Illini. A big thank you to Kelly Ford for coming on and talking about the rating system. Gives you a little bit of an expectation. So the Illini have a 33% chance of getting 6 wins and going to a bowl. I'm sure Brett Bielema is looking at that and saying, we'll beat that. So it will be a fantastic opportunity for the Illini to see if they can compete against a really tough schedule and to surprise some people. Stranger things have happened in sports. Go to www.IlliniGuys.com. Subscribe there so that you can get all of our coverage, including the message board that has all the dirt and things that happen before they happen, the things that we can't really put as a story because the sources may not be able to go on record. But that is well worth it. $99 a year. We're getting close to football season. Of course, you have the off season with the transfer portal and basketball season. It is a great year-round investment. It will improve your Illini fan experience. You can also go to IlliniGuys.com channel on YouTube. At least it gets you the visuals. I don't know if you really want that, but it gets you the visuals right away. And of course, you can find the podcast on any podcast distributor. When you find those things, please give us a thumbs up on YouTube. Give us a 5-star rating on the podcast. It really helps us a lot, and we greatly appreciate when you do that. And we've got a lot of things coming in the next few weeks. The summertime, it just doesn't stop with Illini sports and Illini news. We will be back later this week. Until then, go Illini.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.